Business is simple. It's just not easy. We focus on three things to help you run and grow your business more easily. Talent, sales, and how to scale. Can it be that simple? Talent. Develop a robust recruiting, vetting, and training process to help capable people and then help them to become who and what they want to be. Sales. Have a logical go-to-market strategy. Build the sales and marketing structure and plan around it, and then attack and execute the plan with fanatical consistency. Scale. Know where you're going, why you're going. Share with others why they would want to join you. Be clear on who's allowed to join you and what they'll need to do to stay on board. Anticipate roadblocks. Avoid them before you get stuck. And then when you do hit one, and you will, stay calm, problem solve, and find resources to get unstuck. Sounds simple, right? Simple to understand, but not easy to do. Join us as we focus on the tips and tricks and hacks for running a profitable, hyper-growth business. We'll share real-world horror stories and celebrate the victory sagas that will inspire you. This is the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show.
And away we go. So welcome everybody to our first time ever on YouTube Live as we're streaming this podcast with Nick Capozzi, who is the man, the myth, the legend, unbelievable guy. I mean, he's come to us through a couple of introductions, but the way that you probably know him is he's just absolutely killing it on LinkedIn, putting out some great content. And if you look at the views that he has, it's pretty darn impressive. Has a really curious background. And your company, Nick, is just simply put sales pitch, right?
Sales pitching. Somehow, like 6 months ago, I got the domain salespitching.com. I'm like, how is that available?
Yeah, but somebody got fired over that one. So yeah, so he's got sales pitching. Super good guy. Unbelievable radio voice. Completely jealous. And that to boot, a good smile. So son of a gun, Nick, welcome. Watch him on YouTube, not just the Spotify and podcast, for goodness sake. So welcome, Nick.
Holy cow, what an intro. But can you do all my PR, Brian?
I'm there for you. And he has a big manly beard. So you got that one going for you too. So hey, let's jump into this. So, you're just telling me a story. You know, you're fairly new to this. I think you said you started October 13th, was it?
So I had a LinkedIn account prior to October 13th, but I never used it. Yeah. And so I left my job in September, and in October I said, okay, let's see what's happening on the internet here. And so yeah, I started posting regularly. It was in and around October 13th, but I'm at 3 months now, I think. So
yeah, so he's on this thing called the internet. We don't know, hadn't ever heard of it before. So he stumbled his way on it, and now is like really growing his followers. And whenever you look at it, you know, it's just amazing the number of comments and interactions that happen. So, you know, let me go off there and say, other than that backdrop of why we should listen to you, why should we listen to you on how to create content, how to get followers, how to really engage people on LinkedIn, or just, I guess you have a couple of different mediums through which you can tie into people.
I think the best way to answer that, Brian, is I spent 20 years being forced to master rapport building. And I think that is what's given me the tools to be able to kind of create content. Plus, quick sidebar, I did go to college in Canada for radio and TV. So it did help a little bit with the video.
So, okay. So I just went back to back with two Canadians here. I think that I'm going to get thrown out of the States here pretty soon. So son of a gun. So, all right. So we're above the border again. So, all right. It's got to be more than that, than rapport. I mean, rapport, really? I mean, how you're doing a video. How are you connecting rapport right off the bat from video?
So, well, I'll tell you, I mean, when I'm doing a video, I'm building rapport with the audience. It's just in the digital form. Right? That's what I have to do. But it's because of my background, which is pretty unique. So I was in radio and TV in Canada for about 5 years. And then one day someone said, hey, that radio thing, can you do that from a stage? And I said, yeah, of course. And next thing I know, I'm stepping onto a cruise ship in Miami. I spent 20 years in the cruise business. And we used to pitch all the live duty free. So I mean, everything from liquor, tobacco, Toblerone bars, all the way to Swiss watches and high-end jewelry. And why I had to learn how to build rapport ASAP was, so you're in Pennsylvania, right, Brian?
I am in PA, yes.
Okay, so what's the weather like today, mid-January?
It sucks. It's gray this whole entire week. It's cold and miserable. Snow on the ground, but not enough that you can have fun.
Okay, fantastic. Great. Perfect. So let's say we lived in a normal world. You hop on an airplane, you get to Miami, you get on an amazing, spectacular state-of-the-art cruise ship, right? You get on the ship, you're blown away. The hardware, the ship itself is amazing. But, you know, there's the spa and the casino and all these revenue departments trying to compete for your vacation dollar. Plus, since you're coming from PA, there's also the sun, right, that you haven't seen in months. So what I had to do was on that first sea day, so if we're leaving Miami, it's beautiful. We're in the ocean. It's sunny. It's noon. People are having lunch at the free buffets. I got to get you down into the dark theater for an hour to listen to me pitch 60 products in 60 minutes. So I basically had an 18-hour window from the time you got on the ship to get you, to meet you, build rapport with you, get you interested in what I was talking about, and distract you from all these other amazing things that was happening on this cruise vacation.
So that story right there really showed, I'm guessing, a lot of what you're doing in rapport. Now, question. Do you know the step-by-step? Because I started jotting down a couple of things that I noticed when you were doing that, but do you know, are there specifics that you were trying to do in that story to build rapport?
Well, I'd like to hear unvarnished your feedback on that. I'm actually really curious.
Okay, so here's what I'm picking up. One, you started off by engagement. Hey, Brian, aren't you from Pennsylvania? Shows me that you care. So you did a little bit of research. Then you started from where I'm at. I could have taken it any which way, but you then took that as the baseline. Now I'm engaged because we're now talking about me, where I live, and it's all about me. What's in it for me? Then your animation within it, your back and forth, hands up, smiling, moving back and forth. So a lot of animation there. And then storytelling using very descriptive words, very visual, dark, going down to the dark, sun of the, right? So it warmth, amazing, right? All of these very descriptive language. I'm thinking that's all of the different ways that you're building in rapport, engagement, you're modulating your voice a lot, you know, so it's really rather quite good.
Thanks, pal. No, I appreciate it. And I love that you picked up on those things. Now, here's the thing. Those have become so subconscious for me that I don't think about them anymore. And it's interesting that it's often I have to really go back and think to teach something like that to someone. But that was the reality. So I was this radio guy who knew how to do one thing, right? And that was talk with tempo and pace and ad lib. So when they threw me on a stage, this is where it got really interesting. I have about 20,000 hours of live pitching to about 500 people at a time. So I would constantly be reading body language from a crowd. And the way subconsciously after 20 years, the way I deliver is based on this taking all parts of the United States, Boston to Seattle to Denver. And the message that I give in theory relates to as many of those people as possible. So when I take that live experience from reading all that body language, I'm talking the same way if I were on a stage as I am in a video. So conceptually, at least in my mind, you know, that those skills and that subconscious behavior of reading all that body language translates to the smaller screen, even in an easier way. And that's, I think, why when I started posting videos in October, I was very fortunate to get traction so quickly was just based on those things. And I'll tell you what's super fascinating, and part of the reason you and I started talking was I came from this distinct B2C world. I mean, it was as B2C as it got. And I was just fascinated watching you talk and the B2B, the mechanics of it all. And it was just such a different game. So I'm trying now, you know, it's easy to talk about rapport and the B2C building experience, but what I'm trying to figure out is how do I take something like that and maybe possibly, you know, apply it to B2B, at least looking from at least a third party coming in with fresh eyes, right? So.
Well, so two questions off of that. So we're going to come back to that B2B. So I'm marking a note there. But you also mentioned the fact that you, and whenever you're in front of an audience, whenever you're presenting to a larger stage, a lot of times, I'm not sure like if you're this way, but you get that energy from the crowd and it's fun. And that's where the engagement part is. And it's almost addictive, right? We want more of it and we want to see more and more feedback. So how were you able to translate that to video? Because one thing that really surprised me is as I was doing these videos, I was making content, you really have to ramp up the energy. I mean, the energy level for you to do video seems to be 10x. What you're doing in a typical conversation, because it might be 3 to 5x when you're on stage, but it almost seems to ramp up even more on video. Is that the case? And two, how did you get that to translate to video?
So you know what? All these people I've talked to in the last few months, no one's asked me that, and you nailed it. And that was the first day of radio broadcasting school at Humber College in Toronto in the late 90s. Day one, they said, if you want to sound like you're coming across the airwaves with 100% energy, you have to put 150% energy into that microphone.
Yeah.
So that's just something that I've carried ever since. And, you know, the more amped up in energy, not only you helps you control the conversation, but it keeps engagement. And that's really key. Because again, I'm trying to get you to sit there for an hour on a sea day on a cruise ship. In terms of how the comparison of video to live, I'm pretty much the same. The videos I do, the way I'm talking to you now, it's going to be the same type of energy in the videos, and it'd be the same one if it was on stage. The only difference on stage is I would have the opportunity to move around the stage and move within the crowd. And that also really shifts the dynamic. You know, think about that. Think of all these live, when we were at events, all these times people are usually stuck behind the podium. Very rarely using the stage, but imagine now stepping down off the stage and actually walking into the crowd. That level of interaction, it's really interesting to think about.
Now, so a couple of things off of that. One, for those who are listening this, stop listening and watch us on YouTube here, because you got to see Nick's body language and hand gestures. Now, he is, I'm guessing that's not Irish, Capozzi, right? That's...
You know what's funny? My father's Italian. My mother's Irish from Galway. I have an Irish European.
Oh my God. So you're English Irish. So you don't have any temper whatsoever. So he is Italian. So is that like just your personality, really gregarious? And so hand gestures are part of it. I mean, did you grow up that way, or have you amped that up even more with what you've learned and being more intentional on that?
I'll tell you exactly what it is. It was growing up in Montreal. And okay. Montreal is so unique in that it's, in my mind, the true hybrid of a European city in a North American market. So there's more European cities in the province of Quebec, which is the French part of Canada. Like Quebec City is, you really feel like you would be in Europe if you didn't know. But Montreal is this unique mix. And that European ideal and language, like, it blows people away. When I was like 14 and 15, me and my buddies were talking about architecture and art. Like, we actually had an appeal to that. And there was that European influence. And a lot of what I do, the gregarious, as you put it, to me, that's just it was the European upbringing, you know, that. So in my house, you know, we were, you know, third generation Italian, second generation Irish, but, just standing on the street corner, all these people in this European North American city. That's what we did. We were talking with our hands. You had to, you know, to keep up with everyone else. There's actually, and there's this unique mentality that is very unique to Montreal. And I've been a lot of places. I've been very fortunate to travel a lot, but Montreal is a pretty special city. And if you ever have the chance, if you haven't been, definitely go. Make sure it's between June and August. Don't go any other time.
So you don't freeze to death.
Yeah. But that's the window. But that's what I attributed to, is that the European that I was, you know, I lived in a North American market, but in a lot of ways, the city raised me to be European. So anyway, that's where I tie all that to.
All right.
So you're asking such good questions, Brian, because you're opening up. You're opening up a lot of doors. So you're sending me down some rabbit holes. So I'm trying to stay focused, to stay on track for you. But it's because the questions are really on point. You're asking me stuff people don't ask me. I love it.
Well, I appreciate that. So let's tie that then to the B2B side, right? Because most B2B, their features, benefits, ROI, their good use case, all of those things, which are, you're going to snore fest oftentimes, right? It's speaking to the financial buyer. the technical user and all that good stuff. So how do we take what you're doing and take that B2B and more to the B2C and put more energy, emotion, and make that process easier? Is that what you're trying to do? Or talk to me a little bit about how you're trying to bring B2C into the B2B space.
So here's what I'll tell you. I am exploring right now. Like it's really nice to get out there and have some traction early so that, you know, I can experiment and try and figure stuff out. But this is what led to you and I having an initial conversation a couple months ago was, Brian, I need someone to kind of take me through some B2B here, because it caught me off guard, right? I just made a lot of assumptions. And the way I look at it, I don't know yet how you could really bring B2C into a B2B world. I have some initial thoughts and ideas, mostly though, I think around just taking the time to get to know who I'm talking to, right? Because I'm talking to a person, right? At the end of the day, you're a person, and whoever I'm trying to sell something to is a person. They got a LinkedIn profile. They have likes, they have dislikes. What's in that profile? That's an opportunity that's missed. Where are they from? Because really you're selling into like 20, 25 major US cities generally, right? So what do you know about those cities? What can you talk about food-wise, festival-wise? And then not that you want to open up a conversation, but you want to have those arrows in your quiver, right? Whenever possible. But there's a ton of Easter eggs and profiles, you know, stuff like where did you go to school? One that's often missed is like real connections. So I was talking to someone today and I said, hey, I noticed you're connected to, you know, Marcos. Do you actually know Marcos? Oh my gosh, I totally know Marcos. I'm like, I used to work with Marcos. That conversation went in a completely different direction based off the 15 seconds I put into looking at the mutual connections and the 15 seconds I took to describe that, right? And in my mind, and you know, I'm sure you have people way smarter than me watching and listening to this right now. But in my mind, if I'm going to try and sell like a B2B product, let's say there's 10 products out there that they're looking at, right? How do I get into the top three? How do I build an ambassador on their side for me? How do I get someone giving me, you know, feedback, real feedback and real conversations and them getting them to be the person that wants to work with me, right? So how can I get ahead quickly? So that's kind of how it's not even half baked. I mean, I'm still stirring up the batter before throwing it in the oven, but it's a curious thing to me. And I just find it super fascinating.
Well, so let's talk through that because there's a couple of things in the B2B space. Everybody's, you know, uber busy, right? There's just no time for anything. So they oftentimes lose a lot of the small talk. And, you know, I grew up in Sandler and you learn bonding and rapport. And so there seems to be two different types of personalities. One type of personality is my rapport building with you is getting right into it to show that I'm on point and getting after business. The other side of it is more the relational side. And so you have these two different types of sales. And I think the ideal approach is know how to be a chameleon, not to be manipulative in a bad way, but manipulate how you communicate to the way that that person wants to be in front of you.
Right.
But I would guess there's still fundamental ways that you're doing it because clearly you're crushing it and your numbers are showing it. So it's not avoid the rapport side on the personal piece, right? Because that's a lot of times what, you know, in B2B training, they're going to say, skip the small talk, go right into the heart of it, just get after it. But you're suggesting no, go back to what was written by Dale Carnegie How to Win Friends and Influence People and have a conversation with them. So how are you talking with uber busy people, bringing in that bonding rapport, that relational side and keeping it, you know, quick enough that you're going to get down to business and get things done?
Well, I'll tell you this. If I'm getting on the phone with anyone and I have the time, which I usually do, I try and budget in time to spend 2 minutes, 3 minutes looking at your profile before I get on a call with you. Whether
it's not talking 15 minutes or anything, it's 3 to 5 minutes or 2 to 3 minutes, for goodness sakes.
That's what it is. But the answers are all there, right? Like here's a super easy one. There's a ton of these either 3-day courses or 8-week online courses right now offered by major universities and something really specific, right? people tag that on their LinkedIn all the time, especially like there's a lot of Ivy League schools. So, you know, some people, I went to a 2-year, you know, radio program. I don't have a 4-year degree, but some people will actually tag that at the top to look like an Ivy League school, but it was a 3-day contract negotiation class, right?
Yeah.
Oh, but that's interesting. Brian, I noticed you took the contract negotiating class at X. What did you learn? What was like the best takeaway from that? I'm so curious. I mean, it's my space, right?
Yeah.
And they'll jump all over that. They'll, oh my gosh, wow. You took the time. A, you took the time, right? But B, they're like, that's a great question. I'd love to answer that. And it allows them to be the hero as opposed to it being you.
Yeah. Well, but the other thing that you did there is you didn't say, oh, you went to the negotiating course at Ivy League School of Choice and then jumped right into it. You added a second layer there. Hey, I saw that you went to there on this topic. Now let's talk about you talking about you. What was the biggest takeaway? It seems so interesting. So it gets them to open up to talk about themselves. And people seem to like to talk about themselves more so than anyone, which really opens them up. And they can go along the whole entire sales process now feeling more comfortable with you. I guess that's kind of what comes out of it.
So 100%. And I'll tell you, a big deal that I closed recently was in my initial conversation, the person had that they used to be a minor league hockey coach, right? So that's easy for me as a Canadian. Let me pick at that a little bit. Hey, I saw that where did you coach? Oh, actually, you know what? It was in upstate New York. I actually played hockey at Plattsburgh State. Oh, no way. The Cardinals. And then it became a 15-minute conversation of, man, I really missed the Hartford Whalers, which if you don't know hockey, is completely relevant. But they were from Connecticut originally. And I didn't have to sell anything. They were like, so just tell me, so what's the pricing? And just give me the features real quick. Okay, great. Sure. Let me just run it by. I didn't have to sell anything. The guy just wanted to talk hockey because no one's calling him to talk about hockey.
Yeah.
What a pleasant distraction that I am, because, and I'm quoting, I just heard Andy Paul say this. So I just want to acknowledge, you know, he said the other day, as salespeople, we're professional interrupters, mm-hmm. right? So if I'm going to distract you, right, would it be a pleasant distraction, right? Would you like to talk a little hockey for a few minutes if you haven't talked hockey in a couple of weeks, if that's your thing?
So that's interesting. Right now, like the hair in the back of my neck is going against everything in me that I've always taught because, you know, some people that would drive them crazy going to that personal talking piece, but clearly it's working. Now, have you ever found that it hasn't worked for you or maybe it backfired?
Let me come back to backfiring. Okay. In terms of regular day-to-day, everyone wants to talk about it, but I think it's because I have so many repetitions of doing it and I don't even think about what I'm looking for anymore. I just look and it kind of all computes. But it's, if they're like, oh yeah, no, I coach hockey. Yeah. Cool. Okay, great. Hey, let's get into the agenda then.
Right.
So it's no one has ever been offended. Now this is interesting because I actually posted a video on this and I said to people, you know, ask people where they're from. What do you know about these major 20, 25 US cities? And they said, well, that actually backfired on me one time, right? Because I asked them where they're from and it became a HR issue. And I'm like, interesting. I never thought of it that way. It was new to me because again, on the cruise ship, everyone was from somewhere, right?
Right.
I'm trying to get my staff who's from Croatia and South Africa and Colombia to get to know you, Brian, right? I can't teach them about, you know, well, on the eastern side of PA, there are a lot of Eagles fans. On the western side, a lot of Steelers fans. I can't get that granular. But, oh, where are you from? Oh, you're from, you know, this part. You know, what do you know about the food from there? And just ask the question. People want to be asked questions. People, okay, here. This is one thing I used to teach my non-Americans. And I live in America now, and I'm a very proud American. So even though I was from Canada originally.
There you go.
But we wear our colors, right? So that people would walk on a cruise ship and you would see a flock of people wearing University of Wisconsin sweatshirts. Well, you knew where they were from, right?
Right.
Easy conversation opener. But there's that tribalness to the different parts of the country and it's always on display. And after, you know, our loved ones and ourselves, we love to talk about where we're from. Give me an excuse to talk about Arizona. I'll talk your ear off about 300 days of blue skies here, right?
Right.
So that was always an easy opener. And it was just a great conversation starter.
Got it. Well, so you said it kind of backfired for the one that was, it became an HR issue, but two things are coming out of this. You seem to genuinely care.
I do, sure.
And that's, I think, a key piece, right? Because you are relational at the core. And I think a lot of times if people aren't that super relational, it can come across as maybe forced or maybe disingenuous of like, hey, I know I have to do this now. So what would you say to that, that maybe that introvert that is so transactional or tactical, they just, you know, they're thinking about do rather than be or relate. What would you say to that person?
So that's actually, that's really interesting. Another great question. For them, I would talk about, okay, we're getting right into the demo or we're going to, you know, go quickly through this. What's the tempo and pace you're talking at, right? Because even if you're an introvert, you still got to go through the 30-minute, 60-minute presentation. What's your tempo? Where are you pausing, right? Because there's still ways to really keep engagement and pull people's attention in. And this is, again, assuming this, I really took the relational, you know, one way or another. But I'll tell you this, when I was hiring people, you know, I hired a lot of people. I trained about 800 people in the cruise business over the years. But I would take someone out of a Starbucks, right, on land and say, okay, you're not going to believe me. I got this crazy cruise ship job that pays really well. And you just, you're the clay that I need. And you don't have to know anything about sales. I'll teach you that. But you have what I need, which is that relationship building ability. And maybe it's just the space I worked in. There were very few people who were not relational that I worked with over the years who were under me. So maybe there's a blind spot there for me. But I always say, you know, or even for me, when someone wants to go, oh, you don't want to talk about hockey? Great. Let's get right into the agenda. I make sure that my delivery is really well focused. So I keep them engaged. If I couldn't get them engaged off the hop, how do I keep them engaged throughout?
Okay, so let's talk about how do we keep engaged throughout. So what should we be thinking about on the pace, on the pauses like you do so well, how you come up and down and leveraging your hand gestures. So any tips and tricks, and again, everyone listening to this, definitely jump on the video and watch what Nick is doing, because it's really rather quite brilliant, even from the way he opens up his eyes to engage off of it. I mean, it's full body language, right? So
there's theater to this, Ryan. There's theater to what, if we're in sales, there's theater to that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So coming out of Sandler, they always used to say sales or whatever, leadership, sales, teaching. It's a Broadway play put on by a bunch of psychologists. So you got to act and know the other, how, what the other person is thinking and how to engage with them at a psychological level. So, and I think that's what you just get. Some people just get that intuitively.
So back to your original question, the one thing that I always advise people to do, and they won't do it, it's very difficult to get them to do it, is watch their own tape, right? Mm. So, I mean, when I started on cruise ships, I mean, it was literally the year 2000, people would FedEx me VHS tapes and I would sit there and I would watch their 60 minutes and break down tape. I mean, I was watching tape 20 years ago. And if you watch your tape, you'll very quickly find your own crutch words. You'll find if you have tempo issues, unless you're blind to it, but if you have a base understanding of what you're looking for, you'll catch them pretty quick. And, you know, one thing I suggest to people all the time is, you know what? You really want to find your crutch words? You know, record yourself, then open up a Word document, click dictate, play back the video, and you'll get the recording. And just actually read through it instead of even watching it, because when you watch it, those crutch words and stuff will kind of, you know, speed by you. But if you're reading it, you're really going to catch them. So the first thing is definitely watch your tape. The second thing when it comes to tempo is, look, we have a lot of information we have to get into a really small piece of time. So there are going to be times where I do have to talk fast, but if I talk fast with the entire thing, my tempo doesn't change and everything kind of sounds the same and I'm going to lose you very quickly. You're not going to be able to pay attention to what I'm talking about and I'll lose you. But if I can play with pace a little bit and less is more. And that's another thing that when I find people get really stuck on is, oh my gosh, I have to say this line because I closed Brian on that line. And I have to say this line because I closed Mary on this line, right? When I'm building scripts for myself or when I'm critiquing other people's, you know, scripting and presentations, I'm always looking for how can I take that paragraph, get it down to one sentence, and then add a question to it, right? Just to get people to think. So if I, in my mind, when I presented myself, and again, very B2C, very, very unique niche cruise ship market, you know, that's always how I looked at it. And the pausing in the tempo, that was all taught from radio. So again, you know, day one, bring 150% energy. But we spent 2 years basically learning how to ad lib, and a lot of that was tempo and pace. But it's very easy to learn if you sit down and watch your own tape.
So is that the trick then? Is going back, you create this content, and then go back and listen or watch what you're doing and then fine tune it from there?
Yeah, well, listen, part of it comes from leadership, right? Whoever's leading you. So let's say you're on a sales team. You know, one thing I learned quickly was, because I actually left the cruise industry a little over a year ago, and I had a regular job here in Phoenix for a little while. And, you know, I rebuilt the sales team. It was all pre-COVID. And I very quickly realized the expectation was for me to be a dashboard manager. And if I'm just looking at numbers all day and data all day and not coaching my reps through their calls, right? I mean, that's such a missed opportunity. So, and I'll be honest with you, you know, I'm starting to get into more and more sales communities, Brian, and I keep hearing from people, I'm not getting the coaching I think I need, right? Where would I find it, Nick? Where do I go out and get that? So, you know, never mind you watching your own tape, getting someone who's your senior and you're accountable to watch your tape is difficult too. But I promise you, if you sit there and you watch your tape consistently, and people hate it, it's one of the most difficult things to do. But if do that, you will see traction very quickly. You'll flip the script. You'll change the dynamic yourself.
What's one of the key pieces? So we don't have Gong, we don't have Chorus or anything like that right now with what we do. So if you have that, that's helpful. Great. But I would think even if you have those types of tools that you should, we have every one of our sales rep is go back and listen to the best of and the worst of. You know, which one do you think you did really well? Critique that one. And which one do you think you did really badly on? Critique that one. They record it and send to me, and I give them responses or my 2 cents back. And daily we're doing best practices on role plays and different things like that. And what... You're right, because you hate watching it because you know what you ought to be doing. You're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that, right? It's just insanity. But you don't realize it until you're watching the tape. I don't know why it is, but that's a key takeaway if you didn't get that. So let's go ahead. You had something to say there.
No, I was going to say that's one of the things I always do is I'll always, when I critique someone's tape, I'll say, here are the 3 things I'm going to be looking for next week. I would just give them 3 things at a time, because if you know, and this is for the cruise ship environment, they had a lot of additional responsibilities, but I'd be like, these are the 3 things I'm looking for. So when I got them on the phone the next week and I'm watching, I would know if the 3 things were there, because if they had done it or not, but I'd ask them to see if they had watched their own tape to make sure that they caught those 3 things.
Yeah. Now let's transition this to, okay, you're doing all of these posts. Is there a certain formula that you're using for the content that you're putting out, or a certain formula to what you're putting out there? Because I know a lot of what you have, and if you haven't checked it out, it's Nick Capozzi with 2 Z's, K-A-P-O-Z-Z-I.
C-A-P-O-Z-Z-I.
What's that?
C-A-P-O-Z-Z.
Did I say K?
You did. That's okay.
Kind of like, I can't see that. So thank you. So I can't read. It's right in front of me, for goodness sakes. But check out what he does, because it's not just what he's doing, but he really gives some good deep content on there, which is, I think, another piece. Bring content that people actually want. So is there any formula or way of delivering that you're putting that out?
So, you know, it's very experimental for me. Again, I'm three months into this of posting anything. I did video because, you know, for me to sit down and write something, here's how I write. I'll talk it out and then I'll dictate it into a Word document. But I'm not a writer. And frankly, you know, it was, it's a lot harder for me to do a text-based post. So I said, let me start with video. And I just got such good traction. But then I did experiment with a couple of text posts, and I was getting less views than with the video, But a text-based view can be you scrolling through your phone and just sliding right over it.
Okay.
To get a view in video on LinkedIn, you have to actually click play and watch for a minimum of 3 seconds.
Interesting.
So I started posting every Tuesday, Thursday, started engaging with a lot of people, and I was putting 2 hours into what I consider business development for me, which is a combination of, you know, creating the content, engaging on the content, and then, you know, everything that kind of spins off of that. But I've only put up like 15 or 16 videos. However, I followed some really smart people. When it comes to, you know, if I can drop one name, there's a gentleman named Jonathan Palmer, who's with Shea Robottom, and I believe he runs the academy for her. And Jonathan, you know, their focus is video, but, you know, every twice a week he posts an amazing video on strategy involving video. The two things I think I've learned too is, you know, I took a break over the holidays and people started messaging me, hey, are you still putting videos out? And I think some people are putting out so much content. Oh, take this one piece of content, turn it into 70 pieces of content so you can be everywhere. What I try and do is make it really good so that people, when they do see, okay, there's Nick's video, let me commit 3 to 4 minutes to watching, because that is something I do that's unfair, is most of my videos are 3 to 4 minutes. And I have data that shows me on average, people listen to watch about 1 minute. But the point is, the people who stay and watch the whole thing, it's all tied to that same thing I'm talking about. So I don't want to drip that over a couple of weeks and make it hard for them. I'd rather say, look, here's the actionable item off of this video. So here's the video concept. Here's why I think you should do it this way. And, you know, here's how I do it. And here's the action item. And that's one thing that someone told me really early, is always have something that's actionable. And it doesn't have to be like a call to action. I'm not trying to guide them anywhere or sell them anything, but how can I actually give you something that you can take and do tomorrow? Right.
Yeah. So actionable insight.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for being much better well spoken than me.
That's the only thing I can take brilliance and sum it up. So it's determine the content. So you went through that again. So you remember that? So you build out the content.
Determine the content. And let me come back to that in a sec, because that's where people get stuck when it comes to content. So determine the content. I'll tell you why I think you should do it that way. I'll give you examples of how I've done it or what success I've had from that. And then what's the key takeaway? What's the one thing you can hold on, I wrote it down. What's the actual insight? And it's not, listen, that's, it's not that formulaic. It's more just me, you know, turning on the camera and talking. But, you know, once I did a video on just a random cruise ship story, here's a funny cruise ship story about a bear in Alaska. And that got as much engagement as like the business stuff that I talk about or the sales stuff that I talk about, which was super interesting, because that made me realize, wow, okay, people are, you know, kind of gravitating to the content in general, even if I switch it up a little bit.
Well, so do you think it's more, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
I was going to ask, do you think it's more your storytelling ability then?
I think it's a mix of things. I think there's definitely, I'll put it this way. There's a couple of people I coach one-on-one in creating content. And the one thing I tell them right off the bat is, if you can get 1/10 the views, 1/10 the interaction, 1/10, 1/10, 1/10 of what I get, right, you're going to have a huge success with this, because people aren't doing it. That's the thing. And actually, I'm posting a video tomorrow on all of this that, you know, it's funny that we're talking about this right now, but, you know, there's not enough content on LinkedIn. As much content as you think there's not enough content, and there's not enough video content, right?
Interesting.
People are very afraid to put video content. So I did two posts. They're in the 16. If you go to my profile, one's called Video 101, which is the very inexpensive equipment I use for $70. $140. You could look like a champion. And then the second one, Video 202, was how I use a free software to kind of put it all together and give it that like Gary V style look. But this is what I wanted to circle back to, if I may, is, you know, I was talking about creating the content. People get stuck at, what do I talk about? What value can I give? And the reality is that on whatever level, whatever you know about, you can talk about, because you don't have to be the thought leader in the entire space. You just need to be one rung on the ladder ahead of someone else who you can give value to, right? And so I always tell people, just talk from a place of knowledge. And this is the easiest way to do it. Here's 6 months of content. Sit down, click record on some sort of recording device, and just talk about what you do, right? And talk for start with 5 minutes, half an hour. And then once you have that, again, it's my favorite thing. Open up that Word document, click dictate, replay the video, and you're going to get 8, 10, 12 pages of paragraphs. Each one of those paragraphs is a thought, and each one of those thoughts is a post, right? And, you know, by doing that I could talk to my wife and just say, sometimes you need someone to sit there, but if I talk to my wife for half an hour and record it, you know, and just talk from place of knowledge about what I know, well, there's 6 months worth of content.
That's really interesting. So I hope everybody took that down. And is crappy Word have that dictate option as well? Because I've never seen that before.
On what?
On Word as opposed to Apple, because you're an Apple guy.
No, I have Word. I am an Apple guy, but I have Word. It's Word. It's right on the top right hand. There's a little microphone on the right hand side.
Son of a gun. I got to check that out then. So you just click on your recording and hit dictate, and it goes to it for you.
100%.
100%. I'm going to have to check that out. All right, got it. So create the content, not that you have to go out and learn net new, but just take what you already know, like, and love. Because in reality, the things that you know, the things that you do, or likely the way in which you deliver what you know and do, is going to be slightly different than what somebody else does. So like, wow, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that before. So you can learn something from anybody. I don't care how smart you are. There's always something that you can learn from somebody else. So definitely feel free to put it out there. And now, what do you do? You probably don't have this, but have you had any negative feedback? Because especially whenever you start to get good, sometimes you get some haters out there. I mean,
I'm waiting for the haters.
I'll be the first one for you. I'll go, hey, Nick, spell your name with the K, for goodness sakes. Drop the C, right? So I'll be the first one. But yeah, if you get haters out there or people that are giving you grief, so what? I mean,
listen, that means that there's a lot more people that are liking what you're doing or are, you know, interested in what you're doing. But here's something that's super interesting. All the work that I've developed off putting these videos is not from my own network. It's from the expanded network, that exposure, right?
Right.
So when I put a post up, and if you like it or you comment on it, that's going to, you know, populate in your feed, Brian, right? So now Brian's first degree connections are going to see that. So what that does is it amplifies the message so much. But listen, there's work. I mean, it's work for me to go through, especially at the beginning. I put a lot of hours into going through other people's posts and finding stuff that was interesting, or people that were not the same thing as I was doing, but complementary type businesses. And so I was adding, you know, value to their posts. And you know, you want to get a meeting with someone, comment on their post for 2 or 3 days in a row, and then send an invite, and they'll say, yes, I guarantee you. But there was a lot of that back and forth. And I'll tell you this, if you really don't want to create content, what you can do is curate content. There is a lot of good stuff out there, and just be the voice of what's really great. I don't have time to go through everything. Is there someone out there who can do that for me? Thanks very much. Yeah. You know, then I come onto your feed and you just give some context to it. Right. And you don't even have to, you could just be like best of the best or whatever it is. So just another idea as well.
Yeah. And Casey Jones was on here a while back about building up your own personal brand. And she gave a really good suggestion. If you cut and paste the person's URL, or, you know, whenever you go to their homepage, you cut and paste their URL. If you put that somewhere, you just click that and you go right to what they posted. And that's a real quick, easy way of staying up with it. If you do that 15, 30 minutes a day, you're going to have a lot of engagement with people. So that was a great tip by Casey Jones a couple of episodes back.
No, that's great advice. And it's, you know, I'm too busy. I haven't gone, you know, lately to do something like that since I found out about that hack, but yeah, that absolutely works. But the thing is, it's not hard. People don't do the work, right?
And that's it, right?
No matter what industry I've worked in. And I was a kid, my dad was a custom home builder in Toronto. As soon as I was old enough to bend at the knee, I had a shovel in my hand weekends and summers. So whether it was in construction, whether it was in radio and TV, whether it was in the cruise business, whether it's online, 80% of the people don't do the work.
Well, so let's talk about that. What's a realistic expectation? I haven't gone to my 2-year school to learn radio and television. I haven't had all of these years of experience. For us novices, us lowly, non-godlike folks, how long should this take?
So this is actually, this is my post for tomorrow, is how to get this traction in 4 weeks. And, you know, the reality is if you focus on it, but here's the thing, it takes about 50 regular likers and commenters to really get traction every time you post something, right? So you have to build that base. And this is what I'm going to talk about tomorrow. This is my actionable insight is, it was 50 conversations I had to get those 50 people who regularly like and comment. It wasn't just an online interaction. At minimum, it was voice notes back and forth on LinkedIn. But most of those people, those 50 people I had a 30-minute meeting with, that's 25 hours. So over 3 months, I put 25 hours into building that base. But I wanted to learn about them and their business. And I wanted them to understand what I'm doing so that they can refer me business, right? And these 50 people you want, you know, people that who are also creating content, but in a slightly different space. If it's all your work colleagues and you're all commenting on each other's stuff, you're all kind of, you know, on that same branch, how do you branch off? But that was the real key thing, was having those conversations. And people were like, why do you want to have an online a Zoom meeting? I'm like, because we've been commenting on each other's posts for 3 weeks. I'd like to know what you do. Really? Yeah. You want to talk to me? And I'm like, if you don't want to, they're like, no, it's great. But that 25 hours is what solidified for me that base that, you know, since, you know, that tree I planted, that the fruit has grown off of.
And then how about from a weekly perspective to drop those two videos, to create the content, drop the two videos, edit those things up?
So if you're fortunate enough to have a virtual assistant or someone that can help you with it, but the timeline for me is, so one thing I'll do is I'll come and I'll, next to my camera, I'll put like 4 to 8 bullet points about what I'm going to talk in those 2, 3, 4 minutes, right?
Okay.
Because the other thing too, is a lot of people have videos out there that's edit. Well, then what, hold on, are you curating your thought here? Are your multiple thoughts? I don't know what you're doing. But if I just turn on the camera and talk, and it's okay to stumble and people realize that that's an authentic thought and it's coming out in the middle of it. So that's a long way to say, usually it takes me about, let's say 15 minutes to shoot the 3 to 4 minutes. I'll shoot it 2, 3, 4 times. Then I just run it through iMovie just to edit in. I have a couple of little intro outros, which takes 2 minutes. And then I put it through an online product called Kapwing, KAPWING.com. And there's a great free version. And that's where I can add subtitles and et cetera, et cetera. That takes the longest. That probably takes me about half an hour. And most of that time is in the subtitling. So usually to get a video that you've seen, I've put about an hour of actual work into getting that result.
Got it. Okay. And there's a lot of people popping up to help with this. There's Mateo is going to kill me because I can't remember his last name. And there's also James Bowden who's doing this, Lunch Break Media. So there's some really good folks out there that if you don't have the time or you don't have the expertise, you don't want to learn it, you know, there's people out there to help you out. So that, don't let that be an excuse to stop you. So, man, all right, Nick, this has been awesome stuff. I can't thank you enough. So let's break this down. What's maybe one thing that we should avoid doing? One thing that you're like, oh my gosh, that was dumb. Don't do that again. That we can learn from you so we don't feel the same pain.
Hesitate. Don't hesitate. I waited. I should have been doing this years ago.
Nice. Get after it. Default action. I journal that every day, a default to action. What a best hack for you, whether it's around talent, sales, or scale, how to hire people, how to sell stuff, scale, any good one-liner, good content that you can give us there?
The more content that I create, the more leads that I get. And the beautiful thing about being an entrepreneur is I now have the right to say no.
Nice. And no is one of the most powerful words that you can have in your vernacular. All right. Any resources that you should recommend? Any books, podcasts, guides that you would suggest for us other than checking your stuff out, especially the 101 video that you made?
The crew at Five on Friday is absolutely fantastic. And then a couple people I definitely follow around the internet are, there's a lot of cool stuff going on at Rev Genius. If you're looking for sales community, they're newer, but there's a lot of interesting people that are hanging around there. And then, you know, for video, like definitely follow Jonathan Palmer, for video. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, we're talking about live streaming. Travis Lackner, from Beast Node is also amazing when it comes to live stream stuff. And that's where, like, we understand live stream, but I think that's going to be the next really big thing that companies start picking up on because they're not there yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Love it. All right. So I think that you just went into the other one is, you know, what do you see the future holding? Any, what are you hearing out there? What are you preparing for? What do you worry that's going to come up and bite us?
You know, Clubhouse, this new app that everyone's on, which is kind of like audio only, and it's not recorded, and it's these rooms, that got really big over the holidays, 2020. And I'm spending more and more time in there. I'm just curious, but also if you're in sales, if you want to get access to people that you need to get access to, just follow them and wait till they're having a conversation and start asking really good questions. They'll know you. So Clubhouse is a big thing. Live streaming is going to get bigger and bigger. And, you know, I think communities in general, and not just in sales, but I think more online communities after this year, 18 months, it's going to wind up being of isolation. I think the need for community is, I think people understand it, but I think until you actually get into some of these communities and find people who are doing the same thing as you or having the same challenges as you, I think we're just scratching the surface of online communities. And I'm not talking social media. I'm talking real, engaging, communities like Rev Genius and stuff that's out there.
Got it. Well, and all really good stuff. So I hadn't heard about the Clubhouse, you said?
Oh, you haven't heard about Clubhouse?
No.
Be careful. It is very addicting. It's literally just an app. It's an app. And I don't know. Here, let me see. So you can actually, it's just these rooms, right? And you just, yeah. I see who's talking. So in this one room, Michael David Chapman, who's really interesting, is in there with Judy Fox, Liam Darmody, Francois Bordeaux is in there. And there's 33 people in there talking. So if you wanted to, for example, get an audience with Judy Fox, who's huge on LinkedIn, there's only 33 people in that room and they're all having a conversation. That's actually a good room, right?
he's gonna, I gotta go. All right, so let me let you run and I'll end with this. So hey, who should reach out to you, Nick? How should they do it and why should people reach out to you?
So you know what, if you're a company and you got a team underneath you, you don't have time to kind of go through tape, or you as a sales leader want some, you know, kind of train the trainer, that's definitely something we can discuss. If you're looking for your company, or whether you're a solopreneur or your company, just kind of a content strategy, especially with video. And, you know, I touched on a lot of things here, but it's really, you know, I'm just scratching the surface of what we had time to talk about. So, and the best place to find me is going to be on LinkedIn, and it's Nick, N-I-C-K, Capozzi, C-A-P-O-Z-Z-I.
Just look for the guy with the great beard and big smile and you'll know it's him. So, hey, everyone, I can't thank you enough. This was a really fun and really content-filled episode. So, Nick Capozzi with a C, thanks so much for joining us today. I'm really glad that we got to talk. Any final parting last words?
No, you're the best interviewer I've talked to in a long time. Your questions were great, and I'm not saying that because I'm talking to you.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll take that comment or that compliment well. So thank you so much. All right. So everyone, do something with what Nick taught you, for goodness sakes. Just sitting around learning stuff is pointless. Knowledge for knowledge's sake does not help you. So get some knowledge for application's sake. Get after it. Have some fun. Smile and talk a lot with your hands like Nick does. See ya.